The Breakfast Club.
Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. You touched on it yourself. It does feel really racing at the moment.
It does.
And largely that's got to do with the fact we're right in the middle of the Spring Carnival and it's Cox Plate Week.
Helpful.
But I think the other factor is that the footy's finished. You know, trade week's over. There's not much more to talk about in football for the time being. And I think even if you look through the papers, you know, the old-fashioned way of looking through the papers, there's a lot more racing content in there because it's racing's time.
It's racing season.
It does make me feel, I don't want to sound controversial here, and I'm certainly not the racing expert of others in the station.
Oh, no. What are you doing?
It does make me feel, and you think about that pushing that Spring Carnival racing back a little bit to give it that clean air.
What do you mean?
Just what I said.
Where are you pushing it back from to?
Well, just pushing it back into more November.
But isn't this exactly what we're talking about though? This is the window. This is the.
I know, but we've had Caulfield, and we've had the build up to Caulfield, and I sometimes think that Caulfield, at times, to the general sports fan, gets lost a little bit because of the trade period, which has become so big in October. I'm talking about the general sports fan. Just pushing it back a little bit gives it the chance to really take prominence in Melbourne.
But you know what'll happen? You know what'll happen if racing does that?
Oh, football will do something. AFL will do something.
The AFL will just expand the time frame.
But it can't.
My word, it can. It'll make up something.
No, I don't think it can.
My word, it can. The whole trade thing's made up. It's all made up.
Yeah, but what else can you do?
No, you can find something. There'll be something to consume the calendar. If you give it a window, if you give it an expanded window, they will say, ha! I'm not serious, these other blokes. We will take it. We'll take every inch they give us, and we'll probably dominate the next couple as well.
Mm.
I think it's a dangerous, game.
It is. I understand that, but it just sort of resonated with me a little bit today. That I mean, it's obviously a big morning out at Moonee Valley. And we'll check in with there, you know, quite a few times. Big morning in regards to the field announcement for the Cox Plate, the barrier draw, Manukato, and all those sorts of things. But
the what?
The Manukato Stakes.
Manukato.
Well, I think that's what it's called, isn't it? Is it Manukato?
Wow.
Or is it tomato? Is it tomato?
Well, I would have said Manukato, but you can run with Manukato.
Anyway, it was just a moment this morning. That's all. Hey, by the way, here's this. This is yours, remember? Oh, shit, that hit you on the head.
Well, what are you doing, man?
I thought you had safe hands.
Dude, there's no light in here.
Sorry.
It's darkness willy-nilly.
That actually hit you on the head.
That hit me in the eye. OH&S claim. If I ever find the HR office, fair dinkum.
I told you I was doing it.
I couldn't see it. It's a blue pen in the dark room.
One thing my trainer, he told me, he said, what did he say? He just told us to be prepared.
Goodness me.
That was remarkable. So you try to head into the top corner.
Well, I wasn't expecting to be assaulted.
I found you criticised me for stealing your pen.
Yes.
And which I did. But this time I didn't. I found it on the floor.
What? Where? Which floor?
Just in the office. Just in the general office.
Whereabouts in the general office?
I can't remember.
On your side of the office or my side of the office?
No, your side of the office.
Oh, hang on a minute. People are planting things now. This has become a game in the office, hasn't it? It's been one of those, oh, we'll stitch him up. Oh, we'll get his pen and put it on the floor and make somebody
No,
else
not run. Really. I thought, oh, that's your pen.
That is my pen. So thank you for delivering the pen. No thanks for stealing the pen initially, because that's what you've done clearly and has
hit you on the head.
Have buyer's remorse or stealer's remorse. And then there was an assault, a flying pen assault. Which I could not see for the life. God, I'm glad it didn't hit me in the eye.
I am as well. Then there would have been real problems.
Real
now, I understand the whole thing about the horses. They need to, you know, get back for the autumn and all these sorts of things. And it will probably never happen. But I know that, you know, it had been discussed. But it was just more a thought bubble today with the way that the trade period set up, the football. You know, if you look through the papers now, even if you scan social media, the internet, there is less football talk at the moment because it's exactly right. It's time. Now, under normal circumstances, not normal circumstances, often we would see a situation where the first test is held around Oaks Day.
Right.
Now, that's obviously not happening this year. The first test isn't until early December.
First test on Oaks Day?
It has been often on Oaks Day. It's done that Thursday.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Probably that happened maybe more in the past. I'm not sure. Okay. You'd have the first test coinciding with the Oaks Day.
Well, I've never put those two together, but it doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
I got a nod from Craig, so he thinks...
Craig nods and it happens. Mm. He's my barometer for what is an actual fact in the world these days.
Anyway.
Because I know stuff.
I'll tell you another thing.
Yes?
I had to do some work last night, late in here. And I drove
in here?
Home. Yeah, I drove home at about 11 o'clock. And
you just need a mattress. You just got to find a room with a mattress. And
my wife did suggest that why don't you just take your sleeping bag. What I was really, it was the most eerie thing I think I've done in a long time. Because I was actually driving through the curfew, which lifts on Thursday night.
Oh, yes.
But there was not a soul on the road, which means that they're doing the right thing, obviously. But it was quite extraordinary.
More so than when we sort of got locked hard last year when there was zero people on the road forever.
But I didn't really go anywhere.
But you came.
There was a period where I didn't drive my car for about 2 months.
I did have a tank of petrol for 3 months last year.
Yeah.
It was a good effort.
Yeah.
And then they put the price up to $2 this week.
Yeah, that's right.
$1.98, which is unacceptable. Unacceptable.
Mm. But yeah, no, it was quite remarkable driving through Alexander Parade down the Eastern Freeway and that sort of thing. And there's just not one car in either direction. It really was genuinely quite remarkable. Because in the morning, there are people going to work, you know, the tradies particularly and those sorts of things. There are cars on the road.
There are cars on the road.
But last night, there was not a car on the road. But that will all change.
Except
in
for yours. Well, maybe it will change. Maybe people are just tired at 11 o'clock at night. Just want to be in bed.
Well, that would be my preference.
J-Rod says, why don't we make the trade period the week after the grand final or 2 weeks after the grand final? Surely clubs know what they want and need for the next season by the time the grand final is done. No truer words have ever been spoken, J-Rod. They know exactly what they need and want. And that's the perfect time. I'll give you a week after for the grand finals to have their window to celebrate and to be awesome. That's okay. I'll give them that. But the next week after that, we're straight into it. And I'll give you 5 days. That's all you need. Because everyone's been doing the wheeling and dealing before that. All through September, the teams that aren't involved are talking about what they need, who they want, what they're chasing, yada, yada, yada. It's a 5-day window, as far as I'm concerned. The week after. No, it's actually 2 weeks, isn't it? So give them a week after the grand final, and the following week is your trade week period. And then you're done.
It kind of was that way. I remember, I've said this many times, going up to the AIS in Canberra for the draft camp, as it was called before it became the combine and all that sort of thing.
It was the draft camp.
And half the time, all the recruiters were looking at the kids, and then the other half of the time, they're off having all these unofficial meetings about trade week, which was then the following week. So all the preparation work was done at that time.
Chubby's leaping to my defence here, and he's concerned about my welfare and workplace safety around here. It sounds like a classic stitch-up half, he says. Safety first, please, Adam. Lucky he didn't borrow his chainsaw the way you return things. It's a good point. Well,
it was a beautifully lofted throw.
No, it wasn't. It couldn't see anything.
Yeah, it wasn't thrown with penetration.
Couldn't see
anything. It was lofted, so it was an easy catch situation. The hands weren't used.
Couldn't see a thing. Not
a sight screen.
No. Well, absolutely. Or some light at some stage would be nice. Off the SMS as well, no Ned Bennett interview today. Anyone done a welfare check? Asks Lee. Now, Ned, of course, was the bowler who conceded 50 runs yesterday on the weekend in WA D-grade cricket. We haven't been able to get hold of Ned yet, but we're keen to find him and track him down.
Yes, the key being the fact that he's from WA makes it a little bit harder.
It's a challenge.
In these times.
It is a challenge. You were talking cricket before. Brendan Julian was discussing the Ashes campaign and the timing of it and all that sort of stuff. And there is a suggestion that we might need to change the order of attack from where the tests are played. Brendan Julian was talking about this on Fox Sports last night.
And if we have to play two in Melbourne or two in Sydney, then we do that. Whatever happens, we should be doing what we need to do to get these games up and running and take all the uncertainty out of it. You know, if Queensland and WA are making it difficult for the teams to go over there, then what we should be doing is saying, right, OK, let's go to the places where we can open up. Let's go to the places where we can play cricket, and then we'll see how it plays out towards the fifth and fourth test. So I would be saying right now that the first test match should be the SCG.
There seemingly is a push and a movement for this to be locked in, to take the first test away from the Gabatoir and get it into one of the states where you can actually make stuff happen without too many restrictions and challenges. And if you need to go back to places like Queensland later on, then just restructure the order for a summer. Just get it done.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've said this previously. I mean, there's a chance that you could have all five test matches in Sydney and Melbourne if the other states don't play ball. Now, it does seem that there is some movement, at least with Queensland, but whether that movement's going to happen quickly enough for it to be as easy as possible is debatable. And the inability to move from state to state at the moment is going to prove incredibly difficult logistically. And this whole thing around quarantining and these sorts of things, when now we know in Sydney that that doesn't have to necessarily happen, well, certainly as strictly as what we thought was going to be the case even just a couple of weeks ago, I think there has to be some conjecture around where they're all going to be played. I mean, it's almost, it feels like it's a month too early.
Would Cricket Australia be comfortable? Well, comfortable is probably not the right phrasing, but how hesitant would they be to change the order? Like, what has to happen where they think, you know what, bloody hell, we'll have to do it. Bloody hell. And one of those
I don't know the answer to that, because you've got all that thing around planning with catering and all that sort of stuff. I'm naturally thinking about catering.
But, I love how the first thing is catering.
But security, catering, all the
all
extra
the logistical
things,
requirements. Yeah. You've gone to the catering, the party pod.
Scones at afternoon tea. But there's all those considerations around what's planned and locked in. You know that. So I don't know. The short answer is I don't know.
Do you have any fears for Jordan Dugowie getting back into the country?
What? Why is he out of the country?
That's a great question. I saw this the other day and I thought, hang on a second, this has got disaster written all over.
How has he got out of the country to train?
I don't know the answer to that. It's part of his Monster Energy partnership. He's gone to the W training facility in Southern California to do a set, to do a couple of sets, three sets of six. I don't understand how he got there. I don't understand how he's getting back. I'm genuinely concerned for Jordan to go at the moment. I don't know where this ends.
I saw that yesterday. My first reaction is, how is he there? Why is he there?
No, I can't answer any of those questions. Can we get him on, Frank? Just put a call through to JDG and we'll get him on. Can't be that hard. I don't know. I just don't know if he's coming back. I just don't know if he's going to be ready for pre-season, because I don't have any faith in the quarantine situations, the international travel requirements and situations at the moment. I'm a bit concerned from a man.
I just don't understand how he got there.
He got there by plane.
Well, I understand that. It might have been Chloe McHale. She may have swum.
It's a big channel.
But I don't know. That makes much sense when apparently it's hard to leave the country.
I don't know. I have some fears. Russell Milton is our UK EPL correspondent who joins us this morning on The Breakfast Club. G'day, Russ.
G'day, Half. G'day, Whitey. How are you?
Going very well, thank you. Are you a horse racing man, just by the way, Russ?
Yeah, I don't mind. You've got the Cheltenham races. So, I don't mind that once a year. I don't see too many horses when I'm actually at the course. I'm usually propped up somewhere, but I do like the odd horse. Yeah, horse racing's a good day out, isn't it? And good fun.
Now, question without notice: have you heard of the Cox Plate here in Australia?
No, I haven't. No, you stumped me on that one.
No, that's okay. That was a question without notice. I wasn't expecting an overly positive answer. It's okay. I just thought I'd throw it out there and see what happened. Speaking of seeing what happened on the weekend in the EPL? I saw that Mo Salah put on a bit of a clinic and staked his claim to be the world's best player.
He's got to be up there at the moment, hasn't he? He's in fantastic form. And all three Liverpool forwards are, Firmino and Mane together. I think, Salah's just shading the two of them, but it's frightening for the rest of the league at the minute. I think Liverpool are unbeaten. They went to Watford and won 5-0. They scored 22 goals from 8 games. which, you know, is phenomenal. So it, as long as those three keep firing like they are, I think they're going to be really close, if not win it. And Salah, like you said, yeah, he's scoring some outstanding goals. I think, you know, there were a lot of people have been comparing them to Maradona-esque type goals. If you remember back in the 80s when Maradona was playing, they were, you know, solo efforts, seemingly getting out of tight situations and, you know, and then having the corners to slot the ball home. But, yeah, Liverpool look really good. And Salah in particular has set the Premier League alight so far.
We saw them a couple of years ago, Russ, dominate proceedings, full stop, Liverpool. Yeah. They were just magnificent. And then they had a bit of a lull last season. Are they somewhere near back to what they were, or is it not quite to that level yet?
Yeah, I think they are. They lost a couple of big players last year, didn't they? Like you rightly said, they had 2 years in a row, didn't they? They just got cooked by Man City the first year, but I think it was 3 or 4 years ago. Then they won the league without losing a game hardly. You know, lost one game, I think, by the odd goal. Were imperious. And then last year, they just seemed to come off it a bit, yeah. And they lost a couple of big players. I think Virgil van Dijk, in particular, at the back there, was a real, you know, linchpin for them. They lost to Henderson in the midfield. And I think Salah was out for a little bit. But they look back to it, yeah. They look well back to it. They're playing some real good football. He hasn't made too many changes, Klopp, to the side. You know, he's got everybody fit and firing, and I think they're going to be real close, yeah.
Russ, I look at Manchester United. They lost 4-2 to Leicester City on the weekend. And then when you look at their next three matches, it's Liverpool, it's Tottenham, and then it's Manchester City. Will Ollie get through those three matches, do you think?
This has been the big debate, I think, since the 4-2 defeat against Leicester City. Many people are saying that he should go, particularly fans have not wanted him in. A few of the top pundits, particularly Rio Ferdinand, think he deserves a bit of time because, you know, the last 2 years he's gotten to third and second. So that is an improvement on what has been going on before since Alex Ferguson left. He seems to have steadied the ship quite well. He has got some tremendous players at his disposal. They've slipped down to sixth now at the minute, haven't they? And as you said, they've got that worrying three games coming up. I'm not quite sure. I think the middle one will be quite easy, though. Is it?
Yeah.
Is they playing in the middle one of those three?
Yeah, they're playing
Tottenham. Quite an easy one.
Yep.
So they've got two tough ones out of three, but it's no, but it's there's a it doesn't seem quite right, does it? United at the minute, for certainly the unity doesn't seem to be there. They're relying on moments of brilliance from individual players. There's, you know, out of possession, they seem to be very easy to get through. You know, Leicester were really good Saturday. They scored four good goals. Vardy's particularly one was one I liked, straight from kickoff after United had scored. So, yeah, it's slightly worrying times. So I wouldn't go too overboard at the minute. I think, you know, we'll see where these three games are. I think he will get these three games, and I think he probably deserves to go through the season and see what happens, I think, and then maybe the hierarchy at United will decide then. But I don't think they should be making any, you know, rash decisions at the minute. They're, you know, with people like Ronaldo and the team, Pogba, the art is to get them to buy into doing a bit more work out of possession. Whether they will or not, I'm not sure. Time will tell. But it's going to be a real difficult few games from coming up. And, I think Ollie will be given a bit of time.
It's one of those check-in days for Jim, the father of two young boys. Jim, good morning.
Morning, gentlemen. How are you?
I'm going well. Are you okay?
I'm great. Why do you ask?
Well, because as the father of young children.
A recent
three-year-old, the Hurricane.
The Hurricane turned three.
Had his birthday and seemingly had an outstanding afternoon too, by the way.
He did, the little Hurricane.
I'm concerned about your children.
Why? What's happened?
And you as a result.
Uh-oh.
Well, as you well know, Emma Wiggle has hung up the yellow skivvy.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for the Emma fans out there.
She's decided that through the pandemic she's worked out what's important to her, and being a Wiggle wasn't one of them.
Didn't want to wiggle no more.
Didn't want to wiggle for 8 months on tour every year, so she's out. And there's a 16-year-old girl who's taking her spot. Shouldn't she be in school, the 16-year-old girl? She can't be touring for 8 months. Emma Wiggle's gone.
Ah, youth policy at the Wiggles.
Yeah.
Well, clearly.
It's getting games into youngsters.
It's a real rebuild.
Yeah, it is a rebuild. And I wonder if they'll package up some picks like you think, Half.
Yeah, I would.
Mate, don't get. Can you please not fall into the trap of this?
Package him up.
Don't.
26, 27, 28. Give me 10.
No, it's not
give
happening.
Give me 10.
No one's giving up 10 for picks in the 20s.
You need picks. No, you need points.
Stop that nonsense, please. And it frustrates me.
You know I'm right.
It frustrates me, and the only time when you say that, I hope I'm driving past a tram so I don't hear it.
You know I'm right. You know I'm right.
You're not. And the fact you're bringing... No one is swapping you, no matter how you package it all up, as you say. Picks 30s for pick 10. Pick 10 is a good pick, and you keep it at pick 10.
No, you need points, mate.
You don't.
Go and look for someone who needs points. Because you know that the points tally of 26, 27, 28... Don't do you know what it's equivalent to? Do you know? James Bartel,
What it's equivalent to, but it's not that pick. So,
well, what is it?
What would it be? 26, 27, and 28
is equivalent points wise, and this is the only game I'm playing at the moment for James.
He's being silly.
Who's not listening?
I am not listening
because he's ignorant.
He's not ignorant. Don't get offensive.
Is pick 4. There you go. So, give me 10. Give me 10 for 26.
All right. So you're picking.
Those three picks are for pick 4.
Well, that's the points tally.
All right, Daniel. Put it this way.
What?
Who is 26, 27, and 28 in Dustin Martin's draft?
No idea.
Exactly.
Was it Dusty?
No, Dustin Martin was pick 4, you egg.
Right, okay. Well, who's next? Give me another one.
But
hang on a second.
So you just proved my point for
that's
me.
It's like saying...
Thank you.
It was like saying, who is the pick after Don Bradman?
It's nothing like that,
yes,
Daniel.
Yes, it is. We're talking goats.
No, you're being silly now.
No, you're being silly.
Because you couldn't tell me who picked 26, 27, and 28 was in Dustin Martin's draft, and Dustin Martin was pick 4. That's the point I'm making.
But what's the point?
You just painted on, I just made the point. You keep pick 4.
No, I'm not saying give me pick 4. I said pick 10.
Well,
I'm prepared to cop a hit to get pick 10.
No, stop it. Which leads me, thank you for...
It'll happen.
Thank you for making my segue for me. The articles that I don't want to see.
You're ignorant. You got set?
No, I'm not ignorant.
You're getting a bit nasty. You tell you, mate.
I'm not being nasty at all.
Step in.
All of a sudden, Emma Winger leaves and he just gets really frantic.
No, I'm not telling Jemima that Emma Wiggle's leaving. She'll just be watching replays.
My boys weren't big Wiggle fans. Were you, Wigglets? They weren't big Wigglets.
Do you know who... I just got a feeling that Mick Sharkey would be involved in the Wiggles. He'd have a Wiggle story somewhere. Do you know that Mick Sharkey's got a story about just about any person on the planet? The shark? He's a machine.
Can we borrow the great man here who uses the men?
Matty Stewart.
Is he a storyman?
Yeah, he's a storyman.
Yeah, story.
No doubt about that.
Dustin Martin was pick 3, by the way.
3.
Oh, well, exactly.
Oh, he was better.
Jim.
Pick 3.
Ah, so, okay.
So who was pick 4 that draft?
Anthony Morabito. So...
Oh. Hang on a second. This changes everything. This changes everything.
Can we go a little bit further?
My word, we can.
Look how happy you two are.
Pick 28 in the draft.
Yes.
Mitch Duncan.
Oh.
Pick 29, Jack Gunston. Oh.
You didn't have pick 29. Yeah, 26, 27, 28.
I've got to pick Jack, though.
You know what I'm saying.
Oh. So you're going to give me... Nah. You're not taking Mitch Duncan for Anthony Morabito?
No, I'm taking pick 4.
You're not taking Mitch Duncan, Jack Gunston for Anthony Morabito?
Would you swap?
That's fantastic news for you. That is great
would you
research.
Would you swap 20 and 28 for 3?
No, I'll take pick 3.
So Dustin Martin 3, 20 was 5, and 28 was Duncan.
I'll keep Dustin Martin. Oh, I'm happy going. Well, I'm happy.
Max Gawn was in the Dustin Martin draft at 34.
Big tall man, deeper in the draft, takes time to develop. Turns out he's a premiership captain, though. He's got a book out. We're going to get him on.
Yeah.
He's got a Steve Waugh captain's diary. It's the Ashes diary.
Do you write them, and then if you don't win, they just get put in the fire?
Yeah, good question. We'll ask him.
I'm always curious about those. It's a little bit easier with cricket, because it's Australia dominant, too. You're only playing against one team. It's a bit harder to write an AFL diary, isn't it?
It's a long diary, like the Ashes diary, the old captain's Ashes diary. Well, you're away for a couple of months, so that's, you know, it's a bit of work required. But over the course of a season, if you go from pre-season to finals, that's a 10-month writing job.
I really enjoyed the Tom Gleisner, who hosts Have You Been Paying Attention?
Yes.
When he brought out the Warwick Todd diaries.
Yes.
They were excellent. I got them every Christmas. But half, which led me to articles or TV headlines this time of year that you don't want to hear. I just don't want to hear.
What don't you want to hear?
I don't want to hear about players doing battle ropes or balancing on a wobble board at this time of year about their fitness.
Jordan DeGoey is doing battle ropes on a wobble board.
No one cares.
In another country.
In another country.
No one cares. It's got nothing to do with anything. Like, okay, he's getting fit. Good on you, Jordan, but that's on my lead news.
No, it's probably not a lead item.
I don't want to hear about time trial winners.
Dennis Pagan used to call that stuff the Football Olympics.
It's absolute garbage. No one cares. It doesn't affect any outcome or result in football, whoever wins the time trial. The only thing about a time trial, and especially the first back one in pre-season, is just don't be a minute over your previous best.
Oh, a minute?
Because you shouldn't.
Then you're in Fat Club.
No, you shouldn't be at your peak fitness day one.
No.
You should be in good shape because you're a professional athlete.
It's changed, though, hasn't it, that expectation? Because you would know this, Jim. Back when I was a boy coming through the system, pre-season was to come back fat and then get fit. And then all of a sudden, about midway through my time, it's about 2000s, start of the 2000s, it became, you better be coming back in decent shape so you can get fitter. Like, they actually twigged that might actually help.
Yeah.
Rather than go out, blow out for 4 or 8 weeks and then come back and try and get yourself back into the nick you were. Mm. How about you not go as hard, keep training, keep moving, come back better than you were last year so we can raise the level again. And that becomes the cycle of, what do they call that, periodization sort of training.
Yeah. You shouldn't be, you know, there's pressure on it. Like I said, there's an elite athlete, but you need the mental break as well. You shouldn't be day one after you finish the season, the pressure, if I don't come back, you know, in career best nick and things like that. Yeah, it's good to aim for that and be in good shape, but the time trial results, day one back to pre-season, is the most overrated thing I've come across in footy.
The fact that you're even talking about pre-season gives me a headache.
That's what I'm talking about. We saw shots of the D's running around, you know, having a kick and a catch. It's great because they were dominant and things like that, but okay. Well, just park that story.
We'll park that.
Like throw it up at the whiteboard meeting on the whip and things around and then just, like, tear it down. Okay, we threw it up.
Content.
Yeah.
Well, that's the triplets on the first day of school sort of stuff.
The other one that we can park is the shots of teams getting off of the bus at airports or picking up their baggage at the carousel.
Love that.
No.
That's cool.
I'll talk to you about that during the ad break. There's a reason we do that.
Righto, stand by for that. Just park that conversation for a second because Jason Richardson, Jimmy, is the host of racing.com.
I love Jason.
My goodness. He's a man for all seasons. He does cricket, he does racing, he does Olympics, he does athletics, he does just about everything else.
Can I use one of your terms you use? And it's very apt for this man. I think he's almost on the podium for it. He's an energy giver.
Well, my word he is. And he'll be giving energy today at Moonee Valley for breakfast with the best and the build-up to the Ladbrokes Cox Plate. Richo, good morning.
Well, I need to give out some energy because there's no one bloody here, my brother. There's no crowds allowed at breakfast with the best, which is very frustrating. But we've already seen all the superstars come out and just stretch their legs, spin around the beautiful amphitheatre. There you go.
Nice.
First one for the week. Amphitheatre that is Moonee Valley. They've had a little spin around, and now they've made their way back. And what you'll find is now we start to move our way through some of the horses who are going to run in sort of more of the supplementary or support cards at the moment. So we're about to go live on air, and we're going to go through all the key runners throughout this morning, do all the interviews, and hopefully see if we can find a winner or two. How are you all?
Great. Richo, you're a very well-presented man, and I heard half a little bit earlier about how well you present on TV. There's two questions. One's about yourself, and then one's about the horses.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah.
I'm scared about the horses one.
No. The people want to know, do you freshly shave the scone every day, or is it just for a TV thing? And second, do you track watch and look at the presentation of the horses as they're going around out there?
Yes, I do. I shave down regularly. I check. Because you know what? When you don't have a lot, and half would attest to this, if you don't have a lot, the last thing you want is tufts.
Yes.
And I want you to all make your way back in your mind. Just shut your eyes if you're driving, please. Everyone else, shut your eyes. Go back and think about when Mil Hanna was struggling with whether or not he was going to shave or not shave. And he had the tufts. The tufts are a disaster.
Well, that was a poor choice for Mil.
Thank you.
The real fryer tuck.
That was a real poor choice.
Yeah.
Someone needed to be honest with him earlier than they did.
So I always shave down. And for the horse flesh, I do. I mean, I just watch the way they move, but I'm an uneducated in this area. I really defer to the others. I defer to those that analyse the horse flesh. And I think the key, you know, from a Jane Ivel point of view or Katie Mallion with Channel 7, Francesca Camani over in Europe, Lizzie Gels with Sky Racing, I think the key is actually having a feeling of what the horse is like week in, week out. So that way you can see a day like, or a morning like this morning, and think, oh, well, I've seen this horse four times since, and by gee, it's improved in its health and fitness. I think they're the key aspects to checking out the horse flesh on a morning like this morning. It's the comparison and just checking out the percentage of fitness they've got. Hey, Whitey, you've been very quiet this morning, but by gee, did you lead with some gold this morning?
No, it was poor, wasn't it?
I was driving along into work this morning, and Adam White, for those who have missed it, Smithsonian Institute.
We don't need to go back. We decided to do the first hour again.
And I quote, gee, I look at the papers. There's a lot of racing at the moment. And Half says, yeah, that's because it's racing season. Yeah, no, you're right, it's racing season. So that's good, buddy.
Yeah, no, I told you. Yeah, see, that's disappointing, Richo, because I did admit that we wanted to start again.
See, I didn't hear that admission.
No, it wasn't a great start.
We weren't sure the mics were on, Richo. We weren't sure it was working. So it was just a bit of a workshop to a spitball sort of session. You know?
But I think okay. My point was...
No, Whitey.
I mean...
This is Cox Plate Week this week.
Boys. Yes.
Part of racing season.
Yes.
No, but next week, we build up to Melbourne Cup Week, which is... part of racing season. So, look,
Now, come on, Richo.
This is relentless.
It's becoming a really elongated attack. And I'm here for it. Yeah.
My point was this morning, I'm prepared to go back there. Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't be, but sure. I felt that this week, without the football trade stuff being spoken about, racing gets its deserved time in the sun, but I think Caulfield should get the time in the sun.
Which is why Josh Blanksby, as the CEO of Melbourne Racing Club and the committee, have been begging Racing Victoria last year in particular. Keep in mind, this week last year, the AFL Grand Final was...
Yes, yep.
So you can smother all the racing times 10 last year. And Melbourne Racing Club pushed a really solid platform forward to say, let's move the carnival back, our Caulfield element of it. Now, it was knocked on the head. The point you make is really valid, because as soon as footy finishes, and this trade period seems to get bigger and bigger each and every year, as soon as the footy finishes and you have the fresh air, suddenly you have people who are what I call the mainstream audience, who just love sport, suddenly get intoxicated by racing, and that can only be good. So I'm with you, Whitey. I think could you imagine if you really started, if this was the Caulfield Guineas week and you pushed everything back by a couple of weeks, A, the weather would improve. Imagine Melbourne Cup Day sort of late November. I know the VRC will never move it because they believe the first Tuesday of November is the important part of the Melbourne Cup, but I reckon the Melbourne Cup would be the Melbourne Cup if they ran it in February. It doesn't matter.
Great to have your company on the program. Jimmy Bartel with us until 8:30, and I'm very keen to talk to Neil Kearney, producer of the Essendon 150-year documentary about this 8-part series, which is going to be on Fox Footy KO. For all the fans out there to celebrate the history of a magnificent football club, he's been good enough to join us this morning on The Breakfast Club. Neil, good morning.
G'day, Half. How are you?
Mate, I am terrific. You're well? You've been keeping busy, obviously.
This program that's on Fox Footy tonight and on KO as well at 7:30. Started out as a club video about 2 years ago. One of the board members, Dave Barham, had the idea of a feel-good film coming into the club's 150th year, which is next year. So we started out as a club video, Half. It started out at 1 hour, then it got to 2, 3, now it's 4.5 hours.
That's like one of those home movie nights, Neil.
It was about 3 months ago, suddenly Foxtel got involved, and I didn't know much about it. They'd seen a bit of a tape of it. And bugger me, if the last 3 months haven't been pretty hectic. Kirsty Brown. We've been trying to cobble together a home video from our respective houses. It's fantastic. I mean, I reckon that the average person who lives in Melbourne or probably a southern part of Australia, if you ask them what organisation they'd like to see inside, I'm sure they'd say their footy club.
Mm. Yeah. Neil, Jimmy Bartel.
You guys know there's so many stories and so many emotions and so much happens in a footy club, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Neil, are you an Essendon supporter?
No, I'm not. But after 2 years of looking at old pictures of John Coleman, I'm just about in love with the place. No, they've been a great club. And to be honest, with this stuff that we've done, the club has truthfully not interfered at all. We've certainly shown them what we've made at the end, but the Essendon Club have been pretty supportive, to be truthful.
4.5 hours, like I said, 150 years you're trying to squeeze into a very successful club, and some of the all-time greats have played for Essendon. How do you get the balance right between doing 3 hours on John Coleman or 2 hours on Dick Reynolds or the Sheedy era? How do you get the balance right?
Well, there's no such thing as balance in my perspective. It's what you've got and who tells the best story. So we've interviewed nearly 100 people, supporters, officials, players. And so you come up then, I guess, with a balance that says, well, I reckon the Dick Reynolds era was probably one of the great eras in Australian football. It needs half an hour of the 4.5. The John Coleman story is probably one of the most compelling stories. The tragedy of a man who died at 44, and interviewing blokes 50 years later, players that played under John Coleman, and they struggled to get through answering their questions because tears in their eyes. That shows the level of affection that the players from Essendon felt for John Coleman. He wasn't just one of the greatest players that ever lived. Now, Jimmy, you'd be impressed by this. In 1996, I did the history of the AFL with Dave Barham, and we interviewed Bobby Davis at the time. So I was able to bring Bobby back to life and Dick Reynolds and a few of these because we got the old tapes out. And in that interview, Bobby Davis says, oh, Coley, he was just something else. You know, even Bobby was getting so excited about an opposing player. Stories are just so wonderful to tell.
Neil, one of the great things about the Essendon Football Club is they've always had big names, superstars of the sport, whether it be players or coaches. From what you did over the period of time, was there a story that surprised you or that you didn't know about that has become one of your favourite stories?
I reckon probably the story that is the most quirky is that in the 68 Grand Final, the Essendon Football Club, in their wisdom, on the night before the game, chose a kid from Strathmore High School to play at full forward. He'd been playing in the seconds, and the kid was a schoolboy. He was still going to Strathmore High. And they told him, you're playing in full forward tomorrow in the grand final. Now, the kid was Jeff Blethyn, and he used to wear contact lenses throughout the season. And throughout the season, he kept losing a contact lens, as you did in those days. They were shockers for hanging on. Anyway, so he lost a contact lens 3 times. And it got till about August, and he only had the one contact lens. And he was playing in the seconds for Essendon. And so he thought, oh, well, I'll get through this. But when they picked him on the Friday night, he's going, jeez, I've only got the one contact lens, and I'm playing in a grand final. And, of course, not many optometrists were open on a Saturday morning in Melbourne in 1968. So he went into the grand final with one good eye. And not only that, Jeff kicked 4 of Essendon's 8 goals. They got beaten. They're the only team in history to get beaten, having kicked more goals than their opponents. Mm. And Jeff had a shot for goal from the boundary about a few minutes out. And that goal would have won the game. Now, he's got no regrets, but it was an amazing story just to come out of nowhere 40 years later.
Trent Busutton might have a very important runner on Saturday in the Ladbrokes Cox Plate. Forgot you. We're going to find out shortly if it's in the field. And Trent's been good enough to join us this morning on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Trent.
Good morning, guys. How are we?
We are very well. How are you? Are you a bit nervous?
No. We've elected. We're just going to stick to the 3-year-olds and we're going to run Forgot You in the Bars. So, sort of the aim has obviously been the derby all the way through. So we just sort of take the sensible route and concentrate on that.
So great news for us to understand the situation with Forgot You. What's the discussion like to get to that point? You talk about the derby being the end goal, but the Cox Plate's the Cox Plate. I'm sure the owners had a conversation to have.
They did, but they're pretty good. Aussie, John O'Neill and the boys, they have the final say, but they've ultimately left it to us. And while it's very tempting not to go, you know, tempting to go to the Cox Plate, look, if he's good enough, he can be there in 12 months' time. So, you know, Derby's a $2 million race, and I think everyone would agree it looks a race that suits them. So in a perfect world, we go to the Vase on Saturday and have, you know, not a gut buster. Hopefully wins, but, you know, if he runs on the Cox Plate, regardless, he's going to have a real hard run of no matter where he runs. I'm sure Zaki and company are going to turn it up at the 1,000, which may suit him, but either way, he would, you know, he would be coming out of the Cox Plate on the back of a pretty hard run. So we'll concentrate on the Derby and hopefully he can pull that one off.
Trent, it sounds like it was a close run thing. Did you chop and change your decision a few times, or were you pretty adamant this was the path?
Oh no, it was certainly hard. You know, especially with a bit of rain forecast later in the week, and the connections of Probabil being pretty solid that if the rain came, they won't run. And I think there's certainly question marks on Very Elegant and Zaki going into the race. Which is just normal, you know. They've both been beat last start, but I mean, on their day, either of them could come out and put 5 lengths on the rest of the field. So, and then you've still got horses like Mahunga, Probabil, and the overseas horses. Who knows how good they are? So, plus the 3-year-old, we still got to turn it. We still had to find 3 lengths to beat Animo, you know. So, while I'd love to have a runner in it, but still happy to try and win a Vase and win a Derby.
Cox Plate breakfast for the best morning at Moonee Valley. Michael Falgate is on site. We're going to start our coverage of a big morning out there at the Valley right now because Blue Eyes has been able to log in from out there at Moonee Valley. Good morning, Michael.
Morning, boys. How are we?
We are terrific. We are even better having your presence as part of our program on a Tuesday morning. What's it like out there? Richo said before that it was, well, there's no one there, no bacon and egg rolls and singers, but what's happening?
Ah, you were wrong, my friend.
Oh, really?
You were wrong, my friend. Because Moonee Valley is such a forward-thinking race club that there is no one here. But when I wandered in, one of the kind people from Moonee Valley said, you've got to go and set up in this room, which I walked into, and it hadn't been used for over 12 months. So I had to wipe the dust off the tables and plug everything in, unstack chairs from the corner. It smelt like your grandma's house that you hadn't been to for about 25 years. But then this young lady comes up and says, would you like a cup of tea and an egg and bacon roll? I couldn't believe it. Oh, almost gave her a kiss. So
we knew that, we would have got out there ourselves, Daniel.
Goodness me, that's what we go there for, Whitey, right. The egg and bacon roll.
Blue, the horses.
Blue Eyes is feasting on that in front of our very
Whitey
eyes.
Whitey does hold the record of 12 sausages and 3 egg and bacon rolls at one breakfast for the best.
Is that right? Well, he did have...
I think the split was more even.
He did tell us the 12 donut story the other day, which was quite unbelievable. Which caught us off guard. Matthew Stewart is Chief Racing Reporter around these parts on RSN 927. He's in studio with us as part of our coverage today. Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Daniel, Michael, Jimmy, Adam, Craig.
It's a big team for a big morning. There's lots going on. And Blue Eyes, we break the news. Well, maybe we didn't break it, but we certainly alerted our listeners to it first. That Forgot You will not be running or not even be bothering. It's just going straight to the bars.
I think it's a smart move. It's a little bit like when you're 15 and you get the feeling that the partner that you're with doesn't really like you that much. You want to get in before the partner gets in. And break it off because I don't think the committee would have allowed him to run anyway in the Cox Plate this morning. So they've made the right decision. Head towards the Vase, which is a very winnable race, and he's a rightful favourite in the Derby as well.
So Forgot You sent Moonee Valley a text and said, you're dumped.
Just people Moonee Valley got it.
It's not you, it's me.
You seem to know that conversation pretty well, Matthew.
Hey, Michael, you mentioned you had to unstack the chairs and, you know, it's a little bit eerie out there. Does that allow... I know you get access to all areas out there, but is there anywhere you sort of wandered and you've been able to turn up some hay and find something that we don't know about just yet?
No, well, the closest we can get is watching the horses work off the track because, as you know, we've got racing bubbles here. So you've got the participants and the horse people in their bubble, which you can view from afar. So I haven't been able to get too close and personal, but did have a look at Zaki working with Mowunga this morning. And I know Dwayne Dunn on the spring ticket's been saying, I just don't know if he's looking that comfortable. Maybe there's something wrong. Well, look, I'm no trained track work watcher like a Dean Lester or even Dwayne Dunn, but gee, he looked good again this morning. He shaded Mowunga in his track work, as he did on Saturday. And I don't think there's going to be any doubt that he will be well-suited with a bit of sting out of the ground around the Moonee Valley circuit on Saturday. Very elegant. Also worked well. Damien Lane said that he was really happy with her because there has been a big question mark since her disappointing run in the Turnbull. So if we've got these big guns that are coming back to form and then the new kid on the block, Animo, it's going to be one of the most mouth-watering and anticipated Cox Plates in years.
Well, Michael, just on Very Elegant, Damien Lane did speak to racing.com a short time ago about what happened this morning. Here is Damien.
She seems to have come through a Turnbull run in good order and happy with where she's at leading into Saturday.
She was here on Saturday morning. You gave her a bit of a click up there. Were you happy with what you felt? And then was it more a familiarisation this morning?
Yeah, she was very good Saturday. She worked in a mate. She got very keen behind as she can get a bit excitable. She worked away from a mate on Saturday. Today was more of a maintenance gallop, but I felt she was in even better order today.
Chris Waller said during the week he was just going to wait for the thumbs up from you and that'll make him a bit more confident heading into Saturday. It sounds like he's going to get that thumbs up.
Yeah, certainly a thumbs up from this morning.
And, you know, that Turnbull run, are you sort of happy with the way that she's come through that and where are you hoping the barrier draw that she might be able to draw this morning to give you the best option on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one because, I mean, barrier draws can be so much less important without knowing what horses are around you. So, you know, a lot depends on where other horses draw. And, I mean, you never want to give yourself a task of a really wide barrier. So, you know, anything between two to six would be perfect.
It sounds like you're reasonably confident that she can hit back and hit back hard on Saturday.
Yeah, she'll be right. She's a champion and she won't stay down for too long.
Damien Lane there, aboard Very Elegant. $7 in the markets at tab.com.au. You happy with $7? What you saw this morning, Blue Eyes?
I liked it. And, gee, you can figure it quickly, can't you? She's a $7 or $8 chance now and almost forgotten about heading into a Cox Plate. And nine-time Group 1 winner. She's a champion. And it's interesting, I'll like to see what Maddie thinks of this as well, but is there a chance you think Animo could start favourite on Saturday? I mean, a lot will depend on the barrier draw today, but the groundswell of support for this three-year-old over the past week has been so huge.
It has, and every Cox Plate's got a bit of a theme, and this theme is the champions trying to dig themselves off the canvas. You know, you've got Gold Trips, he's come over, who hasn't been away from the scrutiny of the RV vets the whole time he's been here, so he's playing catch-up after walking off the plane, you know, when you've had a 20-hour to London, and you get off and go, oh, geez. So he had one of those. Zaki, that little jungle drum just keeps tapping away about just whether there's this little niggle.
Very the better of Mowunga in there.
Mowunga's not a good track galloper, I've heard. So two-horse track gallops, I don't know about those. So, I mean, I don't understand them.
So what are the case for Animo then?
Pardon me?
Over Zaki.
Because he's in form. Yeah. He's a rising star three-year-old. We don't know his ceiling. Won the guineas really, really well. And when the three-year-olds win, they tend to take on the champions when the champions aren't at their best. And you got Zaki, question mark, Very Elegant, had bad blood after the Turnbull defeat. And then you got Gold Trip, who's been under veterinary scrutiny. And then you look at Animo, Felgate, and all you see is a horse that's rising on the up who hasn't got the little question marks that the older champions have. So it's going to be fascinating. I think you might be right, because he's the one that no one's got a query on.
And I'm warming to him. I'm already heavily committed on Zaki, but the more I look at Animo, he's just such a beautiful horse. He's only missed a place once in his career, and that was on debut when he was terribly unlucky as a two-year-old, and he's just the perfect Cox Plate horse. He's a big, beautiful stallion. He won the Caulfield Guineas by a small margin, but he had his ears pricked on the line. I think it was a soft win, and the step out to 2,040 metres, 49.5 on his back, I think he's the one to beat come Saturday.
There's a question. The issue for the committee too is they can run 14, but do they choose to run 14? Mm. Because I've had a chat to Leon McDonald. We'll play a little grab from him with Michael, with Felgate a little bit later on, and had a chat to Matty Smith with KO Nautique. You could put them all in if you wanted to, but This comes back to the thing about, do you cut it back to the elite or do you just throw all of them in to make up for a field of 14? You know, just for the hell of it almost. So Leon McDonald really wants Dallasan in the field. Keon Ortig, they're a little bit, we'll see what happens. If they let us in, they let us in. But do you think Falgate, because they can run 14, they should run 14, or should they trim it up to a line in the sand where maybe the Dallasans and the Keon Ortigs get tipped out?
Well, it's interesting because we may only have 10 this year. So it would be a hard call for a Keon Ortig to get kicked out because he's a Group 1 winner, but he won that Group 1 3 years ago, and to be honest, his form's aren't even fair. So I wouldn't be concerned if they kicked him out, because if they target themselves and promote themselves as the best race in Australia, it's the Wait for Age Championship of Australasia. I'm not as harsh as you, where you want to get rid of the three-time Group 1 one winner from New Zealand and Captivant and all these horses and only have a really elite small
the bar's
field,
very high with me, Michael, in every respect.
It's unbelievable. You have such high standards in every aspect of your life.
Can I tell you a funny story? There's a horse called Callsign Mav, who not even racing people in Australia aren't that familiar with. But
hey, don't ruin my story. He's my first guest.
I know. I'm not going to tell the story of
just
John
give a
Barry.
Tease.
No, I'm not going to ruin anything. But I'm going to tell a story about Danny O'Brien and Callsign Mav. Is this okay?
No, go for it.
Right, so Danny O'Brien, two Saturdays ago, he's looking after Callsign Mav for the time being, right? Danny O'Brien's got a stable down at Bowen Heads on the beach.
He does.
Danny O'Brien's got his horses going up and down the beach last Saturday morning, and a dog, this is all true, dog comes onto the scene out of shot, starts yapping his head off, upsets one of the horses, the horse tosses the jockey off, the horse bolts into the ocean and starts swimming through the breakers and off and gone. Danny O'Brien, Danny O'Brien in 8 layers of winter clothing, including a very expensive Kathmandu jacket, takes off after the horse, swims through... This is true. Danny O'Brien will back this up.
It's like Harold Bishop.
Swims through the breakers. This is a bit George Costanza in the whale. The ocean was angry that day. Swims out, grabs the horse, brings the horse back. Oh, my Lexus keys have disappeared.
Oh, no.
The jacket. And they're in the ocean past the breakers. So O'Brien's Lexus is in the car park for quite some time because he can't drive it. Then the stable gets an email from a casual walker who's walked up the beach a day or so later. The tide has washed the keys up onto the beach.
Kidding.
He grabs the keys, looks at the car park. He's a bit of a racing guy, and he thinks, maybe this is the... These keys belong to that Lexus, which maybe belonged to Danny O'Brien. So I'll email the stable and tell them that I've put the keys under the grill of the car. And it all ends with Danny O'Brien getting his Lexus back. And being very heroic at the same time.
Well, there's a couple of questions here.
It's a very good story.
It's a great story.
If you're questioning the validity of the story, to Mr. O'Brien.
No, far from.
Matt's phone's lighting up.
Far from.
From Danny O'Brien, thankfully.
It's a terrific story, and I don't question that for 1 second, but why wouldn't you take your jacket off as you're running in, sort of Baywatch style? Take your jacket off.
He drives a Lexus. Does he really care about losing one Kathmandu jacket?
Or one Lexus?
It wasn't time to do that. There was a horse swimming out of sea, and Danny O'Brien's more interested in saving the horse than his Kathmandu jacket.
Well, I don't know anything.
I've made up, by the way. He was wearing a jacket. But I don't know whether it was a Kathmandu.
Hang on, was it a Lexus?
Every second bloke in racing's got a Rosemont jacket, so I'm tipping it was a Rosemont jacket.
Well, we don't have one. Blue Eyes has got a whole wardrobe full of stuff, and
yeah,
we don't.
He does. He commandeers.
I want to know if Matty found some Lexus keys washed up on the beach, and there was one Lexus in the car park. Would he put the keys under the grill?
The Lexus would be halfway to the border to a used car lot in Albury. Mate, just give us $5,000 for it. I don't care. Just give us $5,000. I've got to get out of here.
Be on eBay before.
So that's quite a heroic story, isn't it?
That's amazing.
Michael? Yeah.
Well, good on DT O'Brien. He's very busy down there on the beach. Well, I want to find out more about this horse, Callsign Mav, because I know nothing about Callsign Mav. Well, Luke Nolan was speaking after a bit of a gallop this morning to racing.com.
He's a casual bastard, a bit like myself, so but he gave me a nice feel underneath, and he went out there and worked in a sound manner, so I'm very happy, looking forward to Saturday, can't wait.
Happy with the way that he took to the tight circumference?
Yeah, he had no issues with it. He's raced left-handed a fair bit back home, so he he very comfortable around here. Only second look at it, but Saturday under race circumstances, it doesn't hold any fears.
You would have gone back and had a look at his tapes and form, no doubt. A Group 1 winner at his last two starts in New Zealand. How do you sort of see him measuring up in the Cox Plate?
It's hard to probably line it all up, but they've come across in years gone by and been very competitive, the Kiwis, so I'd expect the same. It seems an even, like, we saw Zaki and Very Elegant get beat that last run, so maybe it's evened it up a little bit, but whatever service was presented Saturday, I think he's effective on all. He came across in great shape. John's done a magnificent job with him, so he just had a couple of minor maintenance scalps and a look around here, and he's ready to go Saturday.
Horse seems to have a bold front-running racing style, so should take luck out of the equation.
He doesn't need to lead, and he can get very competitive when he's found in that position, but he's got the visors on, so he can see him coming if he do find ourselves in that position. But he can set off a pace as well and be as effective.
Barry draw this morning. What would be the ideal outcome for you?
Just anywhere from middle to inside, but it depends on what the weather does the rest of the week, because we've got eight races. Well, we'll probably have about 16 races before the grand final on Saturday. So that'll play probably a vital role as well.
Luke Nolan there talking about call sign Mav, who cope with a tight circumference of the track pretty well.
The element he brings is he brings New Zealand Group 1 form, even though it's almost like Ethiopian Group 1 form. It's that strong. It's pretty weak. But he's a front runner. And as we're going to discover...
some of the best runners in the world.
Yeah, well, that's true. But more longer distances in the Cox Plate. We're going to learn a lot more about John Barry with Michael Felgate, including his relationship to a former iconic Australian figure. So we can learn a bit more about that. It's a fascinating Cox Plate, and there's going to be 19 or 20 races run at Moonee Valley over 2 days.
Do you like the 10 race card?
I hate them. I think the attention span issue. 18 holes of golf's too long. 10 races is too long. Don't have time.
What's the number?
Let's go back to eight. Let's make it polite and neat. I spent most of my time. Well, you know, remember Waddy when we could go to the races.
Mm.
Those 10 race programs, honestly, it was impossible to fill out the day. You'd just be thinking, oh, God, we're up to race five. We're only halfway through. And I just think it's a stretch of what we can tolerate in our attention spans. And it's too long a day. What do you guys reckon? I just think it's got out of control.
Well, I must admit, the eight race card was one of my favorite days. 10 does drag on a long way. Now, when it's a big day like Cox Plate Day or Derby Day, I'm prepared to wear it. But I don't want to be doing it too often, I wouldn't have thought, Matty.
I think it should be our showcase. My argument is the industry earns its gazillions every day of the week, night and day, synthetic. That's how it earns its money. Yep. When we get to this time of year, this should be the showcase. This should be the best. Get rid of the benchmark 78s on Melbourne Cup Day. Have the absolute elite of our racing. And that's because that's what we're showcasing to the outside world, is this is the best of what we do. What do you reckon, Jimmy?
Well, I can't disagree with that. Eight is about the right number.
Eight is enough.
Eight is
enough.
The problem is if you have a bad start on the punt and you're all out by race four, before the races actually start, that's a bit of an issue.
But you're going to with
the 10
races.
That's the addict's viewpoint.
But I think you will with the 10 races. You have a bad start because, like you're saying, you got the lower benchmarks going and you go, oh, no, I'm just punting on it because it's there.
Yeah. Anyway,
well,
look,
Blue Eyes, what's your take on that? You're living the dream on the TV coverage for the Spring Carnival, the Melbourne Cup Carnival through Channel 10. What's your take on the 10 race cards?
I think what you said, Half, on the major days it's fine, but I mean, I don't like Sydney. They have 10 races day in, day out. Even in the middle of winter, they're starting under lights at 7:30 in the morning, the first race. So that is too much. But I can understand why, we discussed it at the verdict yesterday, why Caulfield on Cup Day, Cox Plate Day, and you've got your 4 days of Flemington. Remember Oaks Day, though, Flemington, they have had the later start and tried to reduce the amount of racing on that day. Amanda Elliott was a big champion of that to try and give it a little bit more like that European Royal Ascot later in the afternoon starts, shorter races, race times and so forth. But it is their big days of the year where they want to maximise turnover and have the most races. Now, outside of those four, five, six premium race days, I'm with Matt that I think eight's enough.
Yeah, the difference is I think on the premium days, they're the exact ones you should rein in. Because Oaks Day, they weren't even half pregnant. They were just a first date type pregnancy type, because they were going to rein it in and run it as a twilight and get it and make it cheaper and get the uni students in and that, but they still had 9 or 10 races. They didn't bite the bullet.
Can I just ask one question?
What?
The text careful. Message that you send to end something, like Allah forgot you, how would you phrase it?
It's gutless, for a start. It's vague, because I'm a bit, I don't want to overcommit. And it ends with a dot, dot, dot. I leave it open-ended. You can never totally, rule anything out.
Never fully say never. Well, it's an interesting conversation, I reckon. One of the other points that came up, Jimmy actually brought this up this morning, I'm keen to bring it up with you, learned gentlemen, is the fact that we had incentivise and the whole Australiana component of this edition of the Caulfield Cup. The internationals weren't here, and it was nice to be able to just bring it back to grassroots and have that home, real home connection to the storyline. Now, we could have had it anyway if there were internationals here because he's such a good horse, but the Australian, the local component of this conversation this year in the big races, in the big carnival races, do we think it's a good thing, or do we think it's missing something? Richo said that perhaps the gravitas isn't quite there. The incentivise didn't beat one of these champs from the internationals, and it didn't quite have the gravitas that perhaps it could have.
I tend to agree with Richo a bit, because it was interesting that, and I've always thought that we always had too many internationals for the Melbourne Cup, and I think it had to be reined into sensible balance, and we maybe will achieve that through these hoops they have to jump through. But Daniel O'Sullivan, who's the best judge in the world, said it was a performance that would have won an ARC and was right up there with Mishriff and co. And I just don't agree with that. Those super stayers of Europe are a furlong ahead. They are. Incentivise won the weakest Caulfield Cup I can remember by a good margin, but not by 15 lengths, not by 12 or anything like that, and rated through the roof and so on. He beat a horse that sat three wide and can't run 2,000 metres, let alone 2,400 metres. So I think it needed a Murder Glass or a Americaine or a Dunedin for me to be convinced that it was as world-class a performance as we're saying it was.
A bit of the point. The bit of the point I was making, though, was it like a one-off year, a bit of a reset, so we fell back in love with, as we said, the Australiana, as you were saying, half before the internationals get back again.
Yeah, I agree with that element as well, Mike. I like, if it's forced upon us, there are things that we can jump on and celebrate, as Jimmy's saying, yeah.
Did you see the tweet last night from Charlie Fellow? So I think he might have had his tongue in the side of his mouth. It was actually in response to a question that we put out on RSN's Twitter feed about the strength of the race with Incentivise after Dan O'Sullivan said he's top five in the world. And the theme of Charlie Fellow's tweet was, we'll have a stronger race, at the midweeks next week racing over there. And there was a lot of testy replies saying, well, you race for ribbons, enjoy that. I think there is a little bit of bitterness from Charlie Fellows because of the hoops that stopped Prince of Arran coming back out here. But it was interesting that from his perspective over there, he's saying, oh, yeah, it was a good race, but you didn't have an international, so it was just an average field.
The one advantage of having the locals is that you could follow all of them through their entire campaign to the Caulfield Cup. We'd seen them four or five times. We knew the horses. The disadvantage of the internationals is, apart from them being out at Werribee, we see them once, and then often we never see them again. Whereas with these horses, we are familiar with them. And I think that is an advantage to having locals in the Caulfield Cup or a Melbourne Cup.
I think he's probably right. I mean, when we were talking about the Caulfield Cup being a great Caulfield Cup, what we meant was we're really interested in it because we're wondering what Incentivise will do from the barrier, whether Moody can win it, whether Preble can win it, whether it can go on and win the Melbourne Cup.
They're great storylines.
But doesn't necessarily... But it was a terrible Caulfield Cup. It really was. So what do you do? Oh, remember when Mike Simons was chairman, I said that, and didn't let me off the hook for a while.
I was just going through the pedigree of Incentivise through the break, as I do.
Bred to be a sprinter.
Quite remarkable, isn't it? Quite remarkable. Having a glacier mare. The world's fastest horse.
Bred to run 1.7 up the Flemington Straight,
isn't it? Yeah, to be so dominant.
Another might have jumped the fence, maybe.
happens. With a text message reply, with dot, dot, dot at the end. That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.